and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. From DeBears to DeBudget, what state lawmakers are hoping to accomplish before session ends next month. And the ongoing fight for reparations, detailed in a new book about the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre. First off tonight, a woman shot by a federal agent during last fall's immigration raids detailed her experience in the final public hearing of the Illinois Accountability Commission.
To this day, like, I'm barely processing what happened. I have not been able to fully cry. Like, yes, I get tear eyes, right, but I haven't really been able to process this. I'm in therapy. My family got affected by it. My mom also, I saw her. It was just hard times, honestly.
31-year-old Marimar Martinez explained to commission members how she had been following immigration agents in the Brighton Park neighborhood and alerting neighbors to their presence before Border Patrol agent Charles Exum swerved into her vehicle, then got out and opened fire. She was struck 5 times. Today, the commission also heard shared testimony from an anonymous witness who corroborated Martinez's account. Commission members determined Exum had no justification for the shooting. The commission, which has spent the last several months collecting evidence and witness testimony, is set to issue its final report Thursday. Construction season might be a bit easier for drivers with the help of Cook County's new interactive map. The mobile-friendly map shows where drivers can find 53 construction projects, 13 of them brand new, and 40 continuing from previous seasons. The map will detail expected start dates, overview, and benefits of the work, including roadway construction and resurfacing, bridge replacement, rehabilitation, and drainage improvements. Residents can enter their address to learn about construction projects in the area. The county's Department of Transportation and Highways says it will update the map with additional projects as they begin. Up next, we hear from some local lawmakers about what they hope to accomplish before spring session comes to an end. They join us right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Lawmakers have a lot on their plate this month. With the spring legislative session coming to a close at the end of May, the clock is ticking to approve a budget. Deadlines are approaching to get constitutional amendment referenda on the November ballot, and affordability is front of mind for many as bills on mega projects and zoning reform make their way through the Capitol. Joining us now are State Representative and Speaker pro tempore Cam Buckner, a Democrat whose district covers parts of Chicago's South Side, including Bronzeville, Hyde Park, and the South Loop. And State Representative and House Minority Leader Tony McCombie, a Republican whose district covers the far northwest corner of Illinois, including Byron and Galena. Representatives, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
In February, Governor J.B. Pritzker proposed a $56 billion budget for the state in fiscal year 2027, beginning July 1st. Some have called this a maintenance budget because of its minimal increases. So compared to 2026, the governor proposed a 1.6% increase overall and a 0.5% increase outside of the required areas. Representative McCombie, over to you first. How does this level of spending serve Illinoisans?
Well, it doesn't. And it's to be a maintenance budget, it would be a flat budget. And this had $728 million proposed increases. So to me, it would have to be a flat. And you can't keep doing this every year as you're the governor and not expect increased spending.
Representative Buckner, same question.
Yeah, I've heard many of my colleagues say that this is a ballooning budget. But the truth is that a balloon floats away when it has no anchor. This budget and the budget that we pass will be an anchored budget. It's a budget that's anchored in schools, anchored in healthcare, anchored in pensions, public safety, human services, and the cost of keeping the promises that Illinois has already made to people. And so this is a part of what we have to do to invest in our state and invest in our people. And we're going to fine-tune this and make sure that the final product is what the people deserve.
Representative Buckner, revenue estimates through March showed that the state has brought in $1.5 billion more than this time last year. Does that change your approach to budgeting at all?
It doesn't. We've got to be smart. We've got to be prudent. We can't make knee-jerk reactions based on some of the numbers that we get back. We have to make sure that we maintain the things that are true for us and for House Democrats. That means that our approach has to be to protect working families, to meet our obligations, to invest in growth, and to be honest about what the trade-offs are. And so that's good news, and we welcome it, but we can't let that send us down a path that's unsustainable.
Representative McCombie, what do these revenue estimates tell you about the budget?
Well, we see those fluctuate often, so it's not surprising that you see it, but also in the next one, you might see it be less. I'm glad to hear that the Democrats are anchoring the budget on, you know, the most vulnerable and what's important. However, there always is and continue to be pork projects that are strictly typically in Democrat districts, and I don't think we can afford any, let alone just in Democrat districts.
So again, Governor Pritzker, he has suggested social media companies that they might be able to provide more revenue. Let's listen to that.
I propose a social media platform fee that will generate $200 million per year to support K-12 education. Parents and kids deserve to have better funded schools. And if social media giants are going to feed off of Illinois families, they ought to support Illinois families.
Representative McCombie, do you think these social media platforms are the right place to look for generating revenue?
I'm not sure. I don't know how they're going to get this maneuvered. I think this was an idea that originally came from the mayor of Chicago and yet to be put forth. I do agree with the governor that certainly there are social media that are preying on children and actually, quite honestly, preying on Democrats and Republicans. So, I mean, it can be a very dangerous thing. And I look forward to, you know, seeing some of that legislation. But how we tax them, I'm not sure that's even a possible way to do that.
Representative Buckner.
Listen, this and the other things that we're going to look at this year for revenue have to be smart. They have to be intentional. They have to be targeted. They have to be balanced, and they have to not be built on the backs of the people who we represent. And so I'm open for any conversation that approaches things that way, that finds a way more ways to take burdens off of the people who we represent. And I think that these are all healthy conversations for us to have.
Then there is the so-called millionaires tax, a proposed constitutional amendment to tax income over $1 million, has not been brought up in the House for a vote, might not make it onto the ballot in November as well. Representative Buckner, what do you make of that?
It's not been very clear about this. I think we have to find a way to make sure that all folks in this state are paying their fair share, and we're not doing it in a regressive way. But what I've also been very clear about is when we begin to push for constitutional amendments around fair share and things like that, we've got to be able to tell the story on what we're going to do with the money and why we can be trusted with it and why it has to make sense, right? And so I think the opportunity to put this on the ballot was something that I was excited about to hear from the people of Illinois. We're doing this the right way. I don't know where this is going to land, but we're approaching this once again with prudence and with deliberance, which is the right way to do it.
Representative McCombie, do you think this issue is going to make it onto the ballot in November?
No, I don't. I think it would have had to hit the House last week. We have, I believe it's a May 3rd deadline, so it's not going to hit the House and the Senate. So for sure, this is one that I think will have to wait, thankfully. But we still have the constitutional amendment for the redistricting that is very concerning and should be very concerning for the state.
Okay, so let's get into that, because there is a separate referendum that could ask voters about amending the article of the state constitution having to do with redistricting. Representative Buckner, what would that amendment change?
So it puts some things in our constitution about the way that these districts should be drawn. It respects what the Voting Rights Act says today about condensing contiguous districts and making sure that we are respective of really the long fight in this country around voting and civil rights, so that communities, specifically communities of color, can pick representatives who represent them, right? This is a big deal because we are preemptively looking at what may happen when the Supreme Court decides on what's going on with the Voting Rights Act. And once again, this is our opportunity to enshrine in our Constitution some guardrails to do this the right way and not to piecemeal it. I know that there are questions about it. Now, there are some concerns, but this is the way that this should be working. You put it up front, you let the people decide, and you come back and you figure out how to move forward.
Representative McCombie, what concerns do you have about this potential amendment?
Well, the way it is right now is not being followed, in my opinion. You're supposed to be doing it based on population, compact and contiguous, and we have roughly 52 districts in the state of Illinois right now, House districts that are not meeting that the Supreme Court has already weighed in the early 80s. What should be on the constitutional amendment question should be, do you want a fair and independent map? The party in control, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, should not be determining our lines. That's how you get an unfair map. And to add race into it above, you know, now you go, if you add 5 tiers total, so you take the 3 and you add 2 more, and to bring race into it, I think you're just asking for some trouble. And I'm also thinking you're going to have some constitutional questions on it.
So the House passed a mega projects bill last week that would allow developments like a potential Bears stadium to negotiate tax rates while contributing to a property tax relief fund. Representative McCombie, do you expect this bill will provide meaningful property tax relief?
I think it certainly can. And, you know, the Bears obviously spurred this mega projects on, and I know Cam just can't wait to talk about it. He's been working pretty hard on it. You know, there's some clarifying language that certainly needs to be put in place in the Senate, and I hope that that gets done. Whether or not it's this week or when we go back next week is a better question. But, you know, we have to remember, especially as Republicans, this is about local control. The locals don't want economic development and people to come into their communities and do this. They don't have to. I think that's one of the things that is really being communicated out in the state. But we have a real opportunity to grow our state, and I think this could be a path to do it.
Representative Buckner, the Bears have already indicated they want to see changes with this bill. What would a path forward look like?
Well, listen, I think we've already begun our way on this path forward. We put together a bill that has the things that they've talked about and other businesses around the state have talked about wanting, right? What we were told was that the Bears want property tax certainty. And what we also have been told by our constituents is they want some property tax relief. And we dare to believe that we can do both of those at the same time, but we can do it in a bipartisan way. And so we did that last week, and we're really proud of that work. I agree with Leader McCombie. There are some things that I think the Senate can add to the conversation. We're going to give them their space to do their work, and we'll come back to the conversation. But at the end of the day, I think we're moving in the right direction. I think this was a strong indication that the House took this by the horns and have really begin to put us in a position where we can stop this conversation and move towards some actual shovels in the ground.
Representative Buckner, you and the governor, you've supported statewide housing reform for building housing. What is your goal for zoning reform?
Well, here it is. We've got a big omnibus package called the Build Illinois Program, which is about cutting the red tape, speeding up housing starts in the state of Illinois, making sure we deal with affordability and access and getting people into homes and home ownership. We can't go back to the old way of keeping people from building because of arbitrary lot size issues or arbitrary zoning issues. Now, zoning and lot size is all matter. But there's a way to do this in a way that keeps Illinois moving, keeps us invested in growth and development and pushing in the right direction. So what we're trying to do with this package is create a system, a statewide system here where we deal with our housing crisis and that it becomes easier and faster, safer and cheaper to build here in Illinois.
Representative McCombie, what do you think can address rising housing costs?
Well, I'm a little bit of a pickle on this particular topic because, you know, the realtors are supportive of this and I'm a realtor. However, I'm on the opposite end of this because I'm going to put my mayor hat on in local control. And this goes completely opposite that. They say this isn't a mandate on locals to have these accessory units, but it absolutely is because it does not prohibit it. So we can't have a one size fits all, and we can't continue to, you know, the mega project gives local control, and now here we're taking it away again, whether it's for solar projects in counties and municipalities, or now here we are infringing again on home rule and local authority. And I think we're really going the wrong direction. You want to help with the housing affordability issues that we have in the state? Lower property taxes. And that is on the state. The state continues to pass mandate after mandate, giving our locals no choice but to raise taxes.
Okay. A lot for all of you and your colleagues to work on in these next few weeks. Thanks to you both for fitting us in, Representative Cam Buckner, Representative Tony McCombie. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, efforts to bring justice to the living survivors of the 1921 Tulsa race massacre. Next month marks 105 years since the 1921 Tulsa race massacre. Over the course of 2 days, a mob of white men terrorized and burned down a thriving African-American community known at the time as Black Wall Street. As many as 300 people were killed. No one was ever prosecuted. And last year, the Oklahoma Supreme Court dismissed the lawsuit that sought reparations for survivors. The story of those survivors and their descendants, the legal challenge, and the ongoing fight for reparations is outlined in an upcoming book, Redeem a Nation, the century-long battle to restore the soul of America, written by the lead attorney on the case. And he joins us now, DeMario Solomon Simmons, author and civil rights lawyer. And we're also joined by John W. Rogers, Jr., a descendant of a Tulsa massacre survivor and founder of Ariel Investments, the U.S.'s largest minority-run mutual fund firm. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us. Congrats on the book to you, DeMario.
Thank you so much.
So back in 2020, that was the year of the so-called racial reckoning. That's when you and your legal team filed this suit. What was the catalyst for this at the time?
Well, the catalyst was number one because I'm from Greenwood. I'm a son of Greenwood, and I remember the stories of how wonderful the community was, all the businesses, all the professionals, and then learned how my community was burnt down and bombed from the sky. And this was something I didn't know growing up until I went to college. And from that time in 1997, I was really passionate, obsessed with educating others and advocating for justice and reparations. And at that time, we had three living survivors that were left all over 100 years old. And we really thought this was a great opportunity with the so-called racial reckoning and everything that was going on, that we wanted to try them one more time to get justice and reparations for them.
I feel like it's a story that, like, a lot of us don't know about until we're almost adults, right?
That's right.
John, your great-grandfather, J.B. Stratford, owned several businesses, a large hotel in Tulsa's Greenwood neighborhood that was destroyed during the massacre. How did you come to learn about this part of your family's history?
I learned about it through my mom. She was a passionate defender of her grandfather, who she really often said that because he was treated so badly in Tulsa, and she saw her father, a lawyer, use his legal skills to stop Tulsa from extraditing my great-grandfather back to Tulsa after the massacre, it inspired her to be a lawyer and for her to become the first Black woman to graduate from the University of Chicago Law School in 1946. So she was really proud of her grandfather and her father and their inspiring leadership.
DeMario, in 2024, as we mentioned, the Oklahoma Supreme Court, they dismissed the case that you brought, but you are continuing to fight for reparations, of course. What's the latest? Where are we?
Yeah, well, you know, we were, unfortunately, we were dismissed by the Oklahoma Supreme Court, but we did get the United States Department of Justice for the first time in 2025 to issue a report about the massacre. We've continued to move forward to make sure people understand what actually happened. It used to be called a riot, now it's called a massacre. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited that we've been able to do that. We have a thing called Project Greenwood, which I talk about in the book, mm-hmm. where we're pushing other efforts to make sure there's justice, reparations, and land reclamation for people like Mother Randall, my one living survivor. She's 111 years old, and she's still fighting for justice. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote this book and why I have for people to go to redeemanation.com and buy this book, read this book, but also join our Greenwood 11,000 campaign. You know, it's about 11,000 people in Greenwood at the time of the massacre, and we're looking for 11,000 people to join our campaign to make sure that Mother Randall can get that justice before she leaves this earth.
111 years old, despite it all.
Despite it all.
A blessing. How do you respond to those who say, you know, it's too late to ask for justice? The people who perpetrated that massacre are all dead now.
Yeah, what I always say, first of all, you have to ask the question, is there a debt owed? And is there a debt owed? And that's where you start first. And then you say, when people say, oh, this is too late, it's too radical, I always say reparations is not radical. Refusing to pay what you know you owe Now, that's radical. You know, you think about J.B. Stratford, the most wealthiest man in Greenwood at the time. John has done fantastic for himself with his business. But imagine where his family would be if J.B. Stratford, he owned the largest African-American hotel at the time, the Stratford Hotel. Imagine if that was not burnt down. He had to run for his life and C.F. Stratford to come and actually save his life. Imagine where the rest of Black America could be if this didn't happen. But that's why this book is about, not just about what happened in the past, but a blueprint moving forward to create Greenwoods all over the nation.
John, the destruction of Black Wall Street, of course, you know, not the only instance of Black communities or institutions being torn down. What is the long-lasting impact of that kind of destruction and the generational wealth that gets stolen when that happens?
Well, it's an enormous amount of wealth that's stolen. Arguably, my great-grandfather's wealth would be now worth over $100 million. And to think what we could do with that in our family and the amount of philanthropy and political empowerment that would come to our community if we were able to benefit from that wealth. And the thing that really makes me also very unhappy is the anchor institutions, even today, in places like Tulsa, the hospitals, the universities, the museums, are not working with Black businesses. They're not giving us economic opportunities. You would think that that spirit would be there, because if you're not gonna give us reparations directly, at least do business with Black businesses in your local communities.
Similar to the, you know, to the question about people might say it's too late, John, some folks might look at your success and say, you don't need reparations. Yeah. What do you say to that?
I think that I can't argue that I need reparations, but I think we deserve a chance to be able to build businesses of scale. You know, our mutual fund company, Ariel Investments, is so much smaller than the big guys, the Fidelities of the world. And so we should have that opportunity to build something great. And as I spoke at Reverend Jackson's memorial, we talked about how important it was to have strong Black businesses. When you looked at what John Johnson did for our country with Ebony and Jet, and George Johnson did with Ultrasheen and Afrosheen, they employed people, they created philanthropy, they supported our community and our businesses in many, many ways, and built a virtuous circle.
DeMario, the book starts with an author's note where you write, we're gonna quote you here, when I speak of repairing America's soul, I do not mean restoring something that was once whole. America has never had a soul. From its beginning, this nation was built on genocide, slavery, and racial exploitation. Repair is not nostalgia. It is construction. It is laying the foundation that was denied at the beginning, insisting that integrity and dignity be established where none existed before. What should reparations look like?
Comprehensive repair for this country and for Black people. It looks like land, it looks like opportunities for wealth transfer, as John talked about, wealth opportunities, have access to capital, having people have an opportunity to be successful. And that's what I mean when I say if we want to have a soul in America, we have to start by fixing what actually started this country off in the wrong direction, and that is enslavement, that is genocide, and that is not doing right by people who've been wrong. It's not about, you asked this, John, you know, can he argue if he need reparations? Obviously, he's been very successful, but it's not about what happened, it's not about how he's doing now, it's about the harm that occurred, and the harm is still happening to everyone that's impacted by the Tulsa Race Massacre.
The concept of reparations, John, has come a long way. The town of Evanston having created a reparations package. Both the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois have created commissions, Illinois recently releasing a report. Does this show that the needle is moving and that some form of reparations is to come?
I think it was moving slowly, but now with President Trump in and the things that are going on today in Washington and the Justice Department, it's really hard to make a case that these opportunities are going to be there for our community. As we know, diversity, equity, inclusion has been kind of deemed a four-letter word, and people can't even talk about it anymore in the corporate world or the university world. So I think reparations, even though it's the right thing to do morally, it's the right thing to create equal opportunity for us to create wealth. That's something that I think right now our federal government has no interest in.
DeMario, same question to you. Do you think the needle is moving?
I think the needle was moving, and I think John is absolutely correct in what's happening with the Trump administration. I think the good thing about the Trump administration is it's showing everyone exactly what needs to be done. And no one now can say, oh, everything is okay, like people try to talk about before. And I think in the book, in Redeeming Nation, I talk about how we move forward and utilizing the five Think Greenwood principles to recreate the Greenwood all over this country, because Greenwood was just as much a physical location as it was a state of mind. And so while we're working with the government and fighting for reparations and justice for what was done, we can also work within our own communities and do what we need to do to build ourselves up.
You named some of those, you named the five principles.
Yeah.
What are those? How did folks in Greenwood build their success in about 20 seconds?
Number one, community love. Number two, a freedom mind state. They went there to be free. Number three was ownership. Number four was wealth circulation. And number five was willful resilience. And that's what we're talking about this year, as we talk about the 105th anniversary of Damascus this year, but it's also the 120th anniversary of the founding of Greenwood, and that's just as important as the massacre.
Okay, well done. DeMario Solomon Simmons, John Rogers Jr., thanks to you both for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Again, the book is called Redeem a Nation, the century-long battle to restore the soul of America. It is out on May 12th. And we're back right after this.
Reflecting the people and perspectives that make up our communities, this story is part of Chicago Tonight, Black Voices.
And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Chicago-based satirical news site The Onion reaches a new deal to take over Alex Jones' InfoWars company. Hear about their plans for the platform. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is a multilingual law firm providing translators for a variety of languages.